right, great. Good afternoon, everybody. It's just after lunch. And I want to thank everybody for joining me at a lunch meeting. I know how disruptive that can be, at least to me. So, members of our branch budget committee, we are now starting the video feed and beginning our meeting. So thank you again, and welcome. And we have a lot to get through today, and we have a lot of presenters, so let's get to it. First of all, let me just start by saying this meeting is open to the public. We are recording. We are conducting this meeting via video conference. Members of the public are watching, and they are watching via a listen-only video feed. So to make that a better experience for them, if I could ask everyone to mute themselves unless you are speaking, and when you unmute, in case your name isn't showing up right, just go ahead and state your name. To the public, so that was on behalf of the public. Now, on behalf of the committee members to the public, if I can just tell you, we have a lot of written materials in these meetings. You will see members of the meeting, the committee, and members of the staff looking at screens or looking down or looking at devices to kind of get to that material. They're not being disrespectful. They're not doing other work. They're just looking at all the everything's on devices. It's not on paper. Unmute when you're speaking, and for all of you who are doing presenting, we have a lot of items to present today. To the presenters, if you could just reintroduce yourselves at the beginning of each of your items. With that, Ms. Callen, could you please take roll?
Judge Rubin.
I am here. Thank you.
Judge Mormon. Judge Mormon,
I'm
are you
here.
there? Judge Bakke.
I'm here.
Justice Fujisaki.
Here.
Justice Hill.
Here.
Judge Hopp. Mr. Harrigan.
I'm here.
Six of seven members here in attendance.
All right. All right, and Judge Hopp will hopefully join us in the not too distant future. But we do have quorum, and so we will begin. I have, in the interest of efficiency, asked to rearrange the items a little bit. So with that, I'd like to introduce Mr. Theodorovic, our Deputy Director of Judicial Council Budget Services, who's going to give us an update of our 21-22 budget and next steps in 22-23. You're muted, though.
Thank you for that reminder. Good afternoon, all. Thank you for having me today. Important meeting that we're having. Just wanted to sort of recap some of the important budget issues and where we're at with things, and also is going to preview next steps. Won't take too long because you've heard a number of budget updates, but the work that this committee and the council has already addressed a vast majority of the allocations that are necessary for the trial courts this year, including a restoration of prior budget year cuts that were in the budgets that were passed by the legislature, allocations of $2.2 billion of workload formula allocations, a significant percentage of funding for the courts, $72 million as it relates to consumer price index funding. And so again, a large majority of the funding has already been distributed and is known to the trial courts. But what we have left here are a few that are before you that came late in the budget process. In SB 129, which was sort of the final negotiated budget package between the governor and the legislature, that includes the $60 million for backlog, $140 million for pretrial, just to name a couple of pretty important issues. I think what's important to sort of maintain as an important point here is that as respects to the allocation approaches that we have, data is a key issue for the $60 million. They talked about workload and backlogs and delays, and so the approach with data is key. They also were emphasizing, as these budget items were being put in with respect to the $60 million, that they were intended to address the workload and the backlogs that exist in the courts, and so identifying where those backlogs are and making sure that the funding is going there is part of, I think, the important commitment we made in getting this funding to the administration and the legislature. $140 million is an example of the kind of an allocation in which there isn't a lot of opportunity for discretion by the committees and the council, in that they specifically identify a methodology as 18 to 25 year old populations. But in this instance, you know, with Shelley and the Criminal Justice Services folks have put that forward. So you have, you know, some important allocations before you, and that'll be a pretty significant sort of wrap up to the budget. There may be some issues coming down through additional negotiations as it relates to remote proceedings, some funding for court reporters, court interpreters, and possibly some changes to our fines and fees. Those are still in ongoing discussions this summer between the administration and legislature. And some of this you've heard in meetings yesterday and today at our presiding judge and court executive meetings. As we're wrapping up this budget cycle, we're already starting the next cycle. Kick back as an example, and we'll be reaching out in the next couple of months to all the courts to provide, receive feedback on what it is that should be next year's budget priorities. We are well underway in terms of completing the budget change proposals to be submitted for the Department of Finance's consideration this year. All the while, we're already starting the next year's process. And so I think we're in a good place with that, and I look forward to starting the cycle, but we have to finish the work for this year with the allocations that are before you that we need to take to the council at the September / October meeting. Are there any questions for me? If they come later on, I'll be more than happy to respond. I did want to note that we did not receive any public comments. I don't know if that was stated earlier, so I just want to make sure that the committee understood that we have not received any public comment on the proposed agenda items today.
No, right. And I wanted to apologize in my haste to get to all this. I went right by public comment, and I see we didn't have any written public comment. And I also didn't get a motion on the meeting minutes from May 18, 2021. So does somebody want to have you review those, do that? A motion.
Move to approve both sets of minutes.
All right. Fujisaki moves. Moorman seconds. Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oppose. Abstain. Passes. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Zlatko, for that update on the budget and positioning that. And we're going to transition now right into our first discussion. Oh, yes, Justice Fujisaki.
We need to also approve the May 26th.
Oh, right. And the May 26th email action. Anybody?
So moved.
Who's that?
Brad Hill.
All right. Thank you, Justice Hill. And then we have a second.
Moorman seconds.
Baki.
All right. Moorman seconds. Baki seconds. All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Oppose, abstain, passes. Thank you, Justice Fujisaki, for catching that. All right, into information item one. And we're about 6 minutes behind, so I'm sorry about that. All right, let me turn this over, or I'm sorry, discussion item one. Let me turn this over to Judge Conklin, Ms. Rose Goodwin, and Ms. Tuck, and just the outline. And then when they're done, I'm going to ask Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. Theodorovic to also kind of talk a little bit to that issue. And I'm also going to ask Mr. O'Young and Ms. Rose Goodwin, if they don't cover it in their remarks. I have a couple questions for them just about data, but I think they're going to share with us some data information overall. And using that as a kind of a jump off point, and then we'll get into further discussion. With that, Judge Conklin, Ms. Rose Goodwin, Ms. Tuck.
Judge Rubin, thanks so much, and good afternoon to all of you. As is typical, I'm going to give you sort of a high overflight, if not an overgeneralization of this issue. And then, as I fondly refer to them as the pros from Dover, the people that really have put in the work on this are standing by for questions. This first issue relates to the allocation of the $60 million for COVID workload backlog, so it was specifically designated for that purpose. TCPAC took this up at their last meeting. We ended up with a unanimous recommendation, but we broke that recommendation up into two parts. So this allocation, again, relates to COVID workload backlog and the ongoing, not even struggle, but goal has been to define that backlog. And through the hard work of budget services, of Bravo Young, of Leah Rose Goodwin, of Brandy, of others, we have come to the most effective that we feel methodology, and that is hard, is data driven, hard statistics. And I'm sure as you've read, and perhaps John and Zlatko can affirm, with that approach, with the data driven approach, I think that gave great credibility to our request to finance and the governor and others to provide these funds. So when it came to TCPAC, I think that issue itself was unanimously approved with not all that much discussion. I thought maybe members would have a little bit of concern, but they didn't, about the first aspect of the allocation methodology, and that is that it's driven by the data provided by the trial courts. So contrary to other allocation methodologies that talked about things such as pro rata, this is very specific, and the overall goal, and I think David is going to continue to emphasize this, and John as other and others, is to be as current as we can, and to recognize as we go along that we want to be current with this information to lead validity of the information. So when this came to TCPAC, as the discussion moved along, I broke it up into two parts, and the first part was asking for a vote on accepting the data-driven methodology. And that was a unanimous approval. It went out with very little discussion. Then we transitioned to the timing of the allocation itself, whether it be in one part or two. And Leah or somebody could probably correct me. I think we had two dates in mind, either October. Was it October or November for the first? October?
It was October.
Yes. October, right, okay. Thanks. And then the next one, January. So 3 months apart. And my, as the report indicates, my initial recommendation was that we break it up into two. But we had a very, I think, thorough and well thought discussion about the concerns that the trial court had about the need for this money and how that need is supported by the data, the current data at that time. And after that discussion, it went to vote, and it turned out to be a unanimous vote. And so even I, and Rebecca's on here, she can comment as well, felt that mainly the voices of the CEOs and the rationale that they put forth about the getting the money to the courts for planning purposes and for other purposes, the data-driven approach was the approach that we recommended to this committee. I know that approach is up for discussion today. I'm glad Rob is here and Leah is here, because I think, as with all these recommendations, they're even impacted by more current information that's come out even since TCPAC met. So that's the first one I'm presenting today, is the $60 million one-time caseload recommendation. And that's how we came to our decision. If there's any questions for me or for the real experts, I'm standing by.
All right, Ms. Rose Goodwin, did you want to add anything?
Judge, I have a few comments if you'd like, just about the methodology that the committee be interested in hearing, just a quick.
Sure, and sure, and then I'll switch over to Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. Theodore, I guess. Go ahead.
Sure, absolutely. Just as a quick overview, the methodology that the committee proposes uses caseload clearance measured by court and case type. So caseload clearance is measured by taking dispositions over filings and converting that into a percentage. And the methodology contrasts a pre-pandemic period of time, which was established as March to August 2019, and comparing that to the pandemic period of time, which is measured as March 2020 through March 2021. The courts have been providing disposition data to us through a quarterly disposition data collection managed by my office. Much of the data is reported electronically through the Judicial Branch Statistical Information System, or GPSIS, although there are some courts that generally, because of a case management system transition, are having to report that data manually. Again, the model relies on both filings and disposition data. Most courts had already, through our regular data collection efforts, had already submitted filings data for the same periods of time, but filings was not part of that disposition data collection, so courts were not advised that they needed to provide that data, and so in some cases, we had to create proxies for those courts who were unable to report. We created proxies for 17 courts in 19 different case types. For some courts, it was creating a proxy for just as little as 1 month of data, and some for as much as 9 months of data. All courts had at least some actual data submitted, which made it possible for us to actually create those proxies. And just very quickly, the method for creating a proxy was to take the statewide rate of change by case type. So for example, if small claims cases increase by 10% statewide from 1 month to the next, that 10% rate of change was applied to the court missing the data. And finally, all of the cases were weighted using the case weights that we use in the resource assessment study model, and that helps us account for differences in workload among those different case types. I just wanted to set the foundation for the methodology that's behind the financial portion of the allocation, and I'll take any questions.
Leah, could you take a moment, I know this might be a loaded question, and clarify, can you look at the clearance rate differences? And we had a discussion at TIC back about it, on the surface it appears that given during the COVID period, courts had a better clearance rate, but really when you drill down, that's affected by case types. Can you just spend a moment there to help people understand that really the court's clearance case rates are how they are?
Yeah, absolutely. That was an issue that we heard it tick back and remedied that with a different data display. And so the issue that Judge Conklin is raising is that if you look at the attachments, so I'm looking at like page 11, and 12 of the materials. We had originally set these spreadsheets up to match some of the earlier displays that were utilized where we showed at a very, very high level filings, dispositions, and clearance rate. And you're absolutely right that without the case level detail, we're combining data from different case types. And so the overall clearance rate doesn't really reflect the actual backlog, which is better displayed in the attachments that start with page 11. Oh, Brandy, can you help me find this? Is it on?
Leah, which part are you looking for again, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's on the same page. It's the weighted information. So.
Oh, yes, it's right at the end. Correct.
Thank you. We added columns L and M, and those are the clearance rates that reflect the backlog and the case types for which they're backlogged. If you were to look at columns L and M on the far right of pages 11 and 12, you would see that for every case, for every court, the weighted clearance rate in column L for the pre-pandemic period is always a bit higher than the data that's in column M. Adding the information about the case weights and identifying the case types where the court experienced the backlog cleaned up some of the data display issues that were proving to be a little bit hard to understand.
Thanks. So again, I think that emphasizes that all the courts continue to have significant backlog that they're working through. You're still muted, Judge Rubin.
All right. Before we get into more discussion, and just so we have a kind of complete fund of information, let me turn it over to Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. Theodorovic, to see if they want to add anything to their comments or Mr. Theodorovic's comments earlier. And then I have some questions and then we can get going on this issue. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Judge Rubin and committee members. Nice to see you all again. So, I'm in complete agreement with Judge Conklin. A good conversation in the TICBAC meeting. I applaud the courts for embracing a methodology that's based on data, really where the backlogs exist. The challenge that that I have, though, with the TICBAC recommendation to you is the data that we have at this point is based on last March's data pool. And we know, and our data experts will explain in further detail, that the courts have been making progress in different areas relative to their backlogs. And the will of the legislature really is for this branch to be looking at where are the backlogs and as real time as possible. And so the conversation that we had within TICBAC was one about the data being, it was good data at the time. It was used for advocacy in with the legislature and the governor's staff, which is great. We appreciate the $60 million. But it is dated. We believe that the courts are in a different place now than they were back in March. I don't dispute that there are backlogs that still remain. I also don't dispute that we need to get funding moving to the courts relative to handling the backlogs. My only caution to you is if there's an opportunity for us to make an initial allocation out based on the information that we have right now to get funding moving to the courts, and then an opportunity to look at pull another data set that would inform a subsequent allocation to the courts to ensure that we are moving the money in the direction consistent with the legislature's will and the governor's will of where the backlogs actually exist and in real time as possible. And so with that, I will invite Zlatko to join in the conversation.
John, I think the only thing I'll add is in terms of this funding, and I think I made the point earlier in my presentation about the amount of money that we have in play here on the margin is quite small relative to what has already been allocated as $2.2 billion, $72 million. And so I think the notion that we can split the funding and provide the money in the second tranche as being sort of directed where the need is the greatest would really, I think, be great for our future advocacy in showing our willingness to really direct the dollars where the need is the most. And our partners in the governor's office and in the legislature, I think, would appreciate that.
Let me thank you, Zlatko. And I thought, let me ask a couple of questions that I have, and then we can all ask questions, and then we can see where we are on this. This is either to Rob or Leah. So I guess the first question is, it sounds to me like what I'm hearing is that the pivot from to clearance from earlier metrics has turned out to be a much better reflection of the workload associated with backlog. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, this is Rob O'Young. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Judicial Council. I can address the question. With the pivot to clearance rates, that basically takes the original view of looking at dispositions only and takes into account the level of filings at each of the courts as well. And so that presents a much more accurate picture in terms of the clearance rates within a particular court and across the branch.
Is the data supporting that this is a relatively static situation with respect to backlog need, or is it fluid? Is it changing? Can we tell anything from the information we have so far?
Yes. So the courts have really been very active in addressing their backlogs, and they've been putting in different mechanisms to address that. And so we see that reflected in the data. And so it's an ever-changing situation. And what we're seeing, for example, in the pre-pandemic timeframe was a clearance rate of about 86%. So basically, of all the filings that came in, 86% of those were disposed. During the early pandemic, that dropped considerably down to just over 70%. And then in the late pandemic, towards the end of 2020, that increased actually higher than historical averages. However, for the overall pandemic period, we are still at a level that's lower than historic averages. And so you see that changing over time as courts adapt, they put in new processes, they take advantage of remote proceedings as well. And so we're seeing that changing. And so we're seeing the backlogs adjust and move based on the actions that the courts are taking.
All right. And are we seeing, as you look at it, I mean, the displays we have, don't break it down by case type, but is the backlog changing over time? Is it itself static?
No, the backlogs themselves are changing over time, again, based on multiple different characteristics because of filings that are coming in from the public, processes that the courts are putting in place. So those are changing over time.
And then to kind of maybe flesh out what John was saying about, or Zlatko was saying about kind of our conversations with the legislature and DOF, are we able to process data in a way that we can give a meaningful, if we were to do this in two, that we can give a meaningful update, you know, sometime towards the end of the year or even, or we kind of, is the way we process it such that we're kind of as good as we can get it right now?
Actually, we have a refresh of the data and data collection that's actually due towards the end of this month. And so we will actually have the opportunity to refresh the data based on updated information from the courts. And I think that that will actually provide a much more accurate picture in terms of more recent data. So using a two-part methodology, for example, using the data that we currently have for an initial allocation, and then perhaps using this more recent data for a subsequent allocation, I think will provide a much more accurate picture of the backlogs, because as I had mentioned before, that picture is changing all the time. And so we always want to use the most accurate and the most up-to-date data that we have. And we actually do have an opportunity with this most recent data collection that's due towards the end of this month to refresh that.
All right, so
yeah, but Rob, I
had one question, and then Leah, I'll totally call on you right away. But I just wanted to, because this my chair nervousness about presentation to the council. So what I've got right now on behalf of this committee is I've got quarter one data, right? Is that fair? And that what I could have, it sounds like you're telling me or telling us, is I could have what, quarter three data or quarter three and a half data if I waited? I mean, if I waited with a second disbursement.
Right, right.
Ah, got it. Leah.
I think if you're using quarters on the calendar year, you'd end up with quarter two data in August through June of 2021. But the point I was going to make is that I think we need to remember that the quarterly data collections that we've been doing had been focused on disposition, because that it was the reporting that we're doing is the result of that $50 million allocation that was given in last year's budget. So we would have to pivot a bit and let courts know that in addition to dispositions, we needed to collect the filings data as well. I think as a principle, the committees that are using data for their decision-making have wanted to rely very lightly on proxies, using them when absolutely necessary but when possible, using actual court data submitted. And so regardless, I think, of whether the committee chooses to use the Q1 data or the Q2 data, I think that one way to refine the methodology might be to go back to courts who needed to have proxies applied and give them an opportunity to upload their actual data. And I think that would be truer to the principles that we try to use when we're working with data.
All right, that would hew more closely to kind of our basic philosophy as a branch we've turned. I guess my question is, and I'll turn it over to the others, I don't mean to hog this, but I think as a committee, I think we'd like to get as close to, like, when a dispersal goes out or when an allocation goes out, that the data we're basing it on is as close in time to that dispersal as humanly possible. And it sounds like we're dealing with a 90-day turnaround from the time it gets reported, validated, and is in a condition to use. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Questions? I didn't mean to.
Ruben, before their questions, just wanted to remind folks that the TICBAC committee had two approaches. One was all at once, and one was to split it. So there was that consideration discussed at TICBAC. Just to remind folks that there was the splitting as a discussion item as well.
Right, and we can split the item as well too. We can split it as we agree with the methodology, and then we agree with one installment or two, and then or we want two installments. I mean, our recommendation will also have two parts, I would assume.
Right, so TICBAC agreed unanimously, we agreed to the methodology. Regarding the two payments, that's correct. That was an issue. The concerns expressed today, I think, were a little bit different than TICBAC was aware of, concerning some issues related to legislative intent. TICBAC centered on being able, as a trial court, to be able to make immediate use of the money. I understand and appreciate the concerns expressed today about how the legislature wants us to be very current. We're making every effort to comply with that. At the time of our meeting, I think the focus was more on trial courts and trial courts being able to put the money to the use it needed to be put to for its backlog at the time of our TICBAC meeting.
Fair enough. Justice Fujisaki, is that a hand kind of going up? Go ahead.
So just to be clear, on the TICBAC proposal, it would be allocating the full funding based on Q1 data, right? And then I'm looking at the A and B options in the memo. And so if A is the type of split we might be considering, the second $30 million would be allocated in January based on, is it Q3 data then or Q2 data?
So the second part would be based on data all the way up till the end of June.
That'd be Q2 data.
Yeah. Let me ask this to follow up on what Justice Fujisaki just said. If we did a second, and I'm not saying we will, but if somebody were interested in, if we did a second dispersal, say in January, the first week of January of 2022, how late would the data be in the year that on which that could be based?
You know, it's hard to go beyond June for a couple of reasons. That June data collection marks our data collection for the allocation methodologies and the court statistics report of the coming year. We have a major change that we implemented to the felony data reporting, and all courts are going to have to get recertified with felony data reporting. So that precludes us from collecting felony through CHPSIS for a few months. So while we may be able to creep up the deadline a little bit closer, it does mean that we may have to rely a little bit more heavily on proxy data.
All right, thank you. All right, other questions? All right, seeing none.
Judge Rubin, if I just jump in, regarding the tick back conversation, I do think that the committee was given the information concerning the relatively long time span between now and when the data was collected. But I think it's important also that, you know, tick back one of their considerations for why go with a single allocation was the primary reason that I recall was about planning and having sufficient time to have the money planned for how to use it throughout the year. And I don't want that to get lost in the discussion. That was, I think, their primary objective for moving toward a single allocation of the full 60 million. Now, as Zlatko has accurately pointed out, on a percentage basis, it's a very small amount. We're talking about the total 60 million when you're looking at how much the allocation in total that trial courts have for operations. But I didn't want it to be not stated that the rationale that was as I understand it, was primarily based on a need for planning purposes.
Okay. Ms. Fleming, I see you open up your video. I feel a comment coming. Go ahead.
Only if you'd welcome it, Judge.
I always welcome your input, Ms. Fleming. Go ahead.
Thank you. I actually want to thank you, John, for reiterating that those concerns from TICBAC. I think that's actually right on. The need for the planning in the courts is related more to the internal processes when you get to a local level. You know, you don't just get the funding and then you go out and you start spending it. You do have to go through a process internally. You have to have plans that you implement. This money is a two-year window, and so there will be some programs that actually have more functionality than maybe perhaps a one-time purchase. The other thing is that the outcomes will change for the second distribution with new data. So there is no way for the courts to plan on the second allocation until those data points are produced. Now, that being said, I do think that TICBAC and the courts do support the advocacy efforts that John and Rob and everybody is presenting, but it will be still a six-month gap in data, whether we use the first quarter to current or the second quarter to January. And so I would absolutely encourage a one-time allocation to support the recommendations of TICBAC, but I would also encourage an effort to make sure that the data is as accurate as possible for the reporting back. The other thing I would add is, to my understanding is that the needs under the COVID backlog funding are far greater than the funding that we've received. And so while the allocation may go out and may slightly be adjusted by percentages with a second set of data, I don't think we're going to exceed it where somebody actually winds up spending it on something that's not necessary to address the backlog. So those are my comments, but I want to thank John for acknowledging that particular discussion item in TICBAC. And I will mute myself now.
Yeah, as do I, John. I appreciate that clarification. And Rebecca's right. And as I said when I started my comments, the CEOs are the ones that are way down in the weeds in this and know it the best. And so I know from the outside, sometimes the thought is, boy, you need to plan. It is your job and it is their job. But the concern expressed from the CEOs at the meeting was, but give us the ability to plan as soon as we can. That now is contrasted with, and I think his is accurately stated, the view from the outside that this money has to be data driven. And what's the most effective way and transparent way you can make it data driven when it is distributed? So, John, I appreciate that clarifying that that's where the CEOs came from and that was their concern during the meeting.
I share the concern. I guess from my side, my perspective on it is like, if I take a longer view, because I appreciate what Ms. Fleming is saying and just managing a business generally, when we go back and ask for more, we're going to have to tell the legislature that we, the council, authorize spending all the money on data at the time that will be over a year old, versus we had an opportunity to tailor it and we chose not to. I think that just given where we are as a budget committee and the kinds of issues that we have from policy and just trying to liberate, as I put it, as many dollars for the branch and as many places as we can, is another factor to consider as we move forward. Other questions for any of the speakers?
Only just to remind, I think Rebecca did mention it, but the money is available for 2 years per the budget language. So there's also a time horizon for courts. There's no immediate rush to have to commit to spend these funds by the end of this fiscal year. So that does give a little of an extended availability for the courts to plan for the spending of the money.
Right, and I saw a presentation by Ms. Rose Goodwin and Mr. Oyang yesterday, which I will just say was the finest data presentation I'd ever seen, like anywhere. And it was also, P.S., the best use of PowerPoint I had seen since, well, I taught it to litigators back when I was a prosecutor. And it demonstrated, it demonstrated the fluidity of the situation. And because of the rapid changes that we're seeing, I worry about how we present ourselves to the public and to the legislature and DOF when things are changing so much and we're anchoring to the past. All right, let me do this. I understand that SEAC and the trial court PJs have concluded their business meetings, so we're not quite as crushed as we were. I still feel like I owe it to all of you to keep us relatively on time. So in an effort to structure the discussion, let me see if I can do this. Let's approach it like tick back to, let's cut it in two. First of all, is there a motion on adopting the methodology of using the clearance rate over the disposition rate? Let's start with that. Or not.
Judge Mormon, so moved.
All right, thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Harrigan second.
Who was that?
Harrigan second.
All right, Harrigan seconds. All right, further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain? All right, that motion passes. The next question we have is there a motion regarding whether one dispersal or two? The first dispersal based on Q1 data, and the second dispersal, I would say, on the latest, most accurate data we can get that is not dominated by proxy data. So if we can push out past Q2 even by a month, we'll do that. So I didn't want to just say based on Q2, but the best proxy data. That's how I would phrase that motion. Anyway, is there a motion on one of those from anybody?
Judge Mormon, so moved.
Justice Hill, you were also going to second that then?
Well, I now am going to second it, and then I'll speak to that a little bit later. And that's the split approach, I believe, that was okay. Proposed.
All right, so that'll be this. There'll be two tranches, one as soon as we vote in October at the council meeting, and the second later, I would assume January 1 or thereabouts. Is that more just Judge Mormon, what you were thinking?
Yes, I was thinking, based on answers about timing that Rob gave earlier, that the data, as far out as we can get without using proxy data, will take us through Q2, but it's due at the end of August. Where's Rob? Isn't that correct?
That's right.
And right. The data will not be then prepared and able to be used and so forth, and then presented for actual analysis. But I was sort of assuming that it would be prepared in such a way that the council could vote on it in its November meeting. Is that the timing? Am I making a correct assumption?
Yeah, I'll defer to Leah to confirm.
Yeah, no, I think we worked out the dates and it looked like we could make that happen for November. Yes.
But in terms of the actual dispersal, this is an 8-quarter appropriation. We're talking about, no one's talking about dispersing it over the 8 quarters, but in terms of just when the second round will go out, this one's dispersed. And I was wondering if you meant January 1, so it's six months, or I think we need to probably build that in.
That well, I guess I was thinking that if we adopted the two allocation approach using the data that's due at the end of August, it would be dispersed as presumably whenever the council approved it. And if that's January 1, then that's January 1. But if the November council meeting approves the allocation, could it be before January, or is that just not a plausible question?
Judge Mormon, with regard to the allocation, once we have the data, which Rob and team will have at the end of August, they will look at that, they will validate, and then should it be in November that the council looks at this second allocation, and assuming that it moves forward, the allocation can be made very quickly after that decision is made to support quarter two data going out, or dollars going out in support of the quarter two data. So as far as timing is concerned, once we have the data validated, as long as the methodology has been approved by the council, we can go ahead and disperse the or allocate the funds out in relatively short order. I think a question here is, one, I think you do need to get money moving to the courts as quickly as possible, so that becomes your October allocation, assuming that the Judicial Council takes an action on this during their September 30th, October 1st meeting. And then the next subsequent data availability, which is the August 30th data pull on second quarter data, could go out at any point, and now it's just a matter of timing for when this committee and the Judicial Council feel is the appropriate time to release those funds out.
If I may, just to add from a historical perspective, there's been times where methodologies have been approved, and once, and that includes a second distribution where we've done prior distributions based on new data. And those have not necessarily had to go back to the council. Once the council approves the method, then once the data is received, it can then just be a force of the action that's adopted at the September October meeting, that then say, once we get the data and it's validated, that then once that data is done, because of the approval of the council in September October, then the money can be distributed in, say, January. We haven't always gone back to the council, because it's a matter of the recommendation and the approach. If the data is what drives it, and it doesn't need to be approved once again.
Well, for purposes of discussion, I think my motion was intended to have the second allocation go out in January 1 or January 2, 2022.
All right. Justice Hill, is that your, are you still seconding on that then?
That would be fine.
All right, and then we can word it to the council in a way that it, in the report, that we'll be using the most up-to-date data we have.
Judge Rubin, can I just clarify really quick the motion, just so I can have it for the minutes? Is it the first allocation goes to Judicial Council, the September-October meeting? Are we then taking the second data set and allocation to the November Council, or is everything just going to October and we're splitting it in two?
I think we should just do it all in October if the council's okay with it, and we'll just split the allocation into the way we've done with other allocations.
Okay, great.
Unless people disagree.
And I know I'm not a member, so I'm just confused and I apologize, but the council meeting is in September. And I'm then sorry. There's a council meeting in November. So it's September that this would go to the council for the recommendation to allocate in October and January. Is that, and I'm sorry, I know I'm not a member, I'm just trying to clarify.
No, correct. Based on the most up-to-date data we have at the January allocation, and we're told that's going to be Q2, but it might be, we might be able to push a little past Q2 and it's a little bit into Q3 if it's available.
I'm sorry, John, Judge Conklin, I confused you by, I kept thinking it had to go back to the council for the November meeting for the second allocation. So my apologies, I caused the confusion.
And Judge Borman, just to make sure, technically we have to be correct, is that procedurally we don't actually allocate January's money until the middle of the month. So when you said, so let's just want to make sure you're aware, monies won't go until the controller and dispersed until the middle of January, but let's effectively call it in January without specifying. I would ask that it not be specified January.
All right, so I'll amend my motion to say the second allocation would go out in January of 2022.
All right, Justice Hill.
I will second that.
All right, further discussion. I saw Justice Fujisaki, you started to raise your hand.
I think that clarified my thought. So is there anything different between what we're deciding or what we're voting on in A on page 10?
Yes. Thanks. Hold on. What page are you on?
I don't think so.
No. It's the same, right?
Wait a second. Let me look. What page are you on, Ms. Justice?
10. 10 out of 48.
And actually, so the second one is for 100% approval of the $60 million, so that is different.
Right. No, I'm looking at A.
No, she's on method. Yeah.
No, I think you're fine.
Yeah, A is what we're talking about exactly.
Right. So there's no difference between what we're deciding now and what's reflected in A.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Further discussion.
And for transparency's sake, we would definitely report on the data outcome and the second distribution so that everybody knows what monies were part of the first portion and what were part of the second portion. So we definitely come back to the committee with that for knowledge, both to tip back and to ABC.
All right, seeing no further discussion, let's go to vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstained? All right, passes, thank you. We're only 40 minutes behind schedule. Sorry. But it was a good discussion, and it's important to have these conversations. To Ms. Fleming, thank you, Judge Conklin. You're not done. You are the rest of the calendar. All right, let's go on to item 2, which is $140 million pretrial. It's a little different. The legislature undertook the $70 million in 21, 22, and there's another, it's split up in two, and there's $140 million total. They have taken onto themselves how it's going to be allocated, which is, someone correct me if I'm wrong, it's based on, I think it's the 18 to 25-year-old population in each county. So with that, Judge Conklin and Ms. Benedict.
Great, thanks. So in all candor, folks, the discussion and the timing of the discussions was very similar in TICBAC. We most of our time was on the $60 million, and then these other issues, not that they're not very vibrant and not open to full discussion, but they moved through TICBAC pretty quickly, just to help you understand the perspective we had. So Judge Ruman, to summarize it, there's $140 million in 21-22 for pretrial funding. Then $70 million of ongoing funding for the Judicial Council to distribute to the trial courts for that pretrial program. This is generally speaking a pass-through. So it passes through the trial courts to pass through to probation and pretrial services for administration of their program, save for the 30% holdback, up to 30% that the trial courts can hold back for use when they administer the program. The methodology for this funding is outlined in your materials. Judge Rubin has stated it's very data-driven. Again, it's concentrating on the population of 18 to 24-year-olds in the counties. As we all know, I want to be very careful the way I state this because it's going to be misinterpreted, but that's the key. That is the most concentrated age group that generally deals with probation and pretrial, if you understand what I'm saying, and that's where the money's intended to go. So that's TICPAC took this up. The recommendation was unanimous that the $140 million go out, given the methodology adopted and the timing adopted. Just trying to make good use of your time.
All right. Ms. Benedict?
Good afternoon. Thank you. Thank you, Judge Conklin. The only thing I would add is that we staff did recommend a funding floor be enacted for the small courts. And I believe TICPAC did approve that, but just wanted to point that out. That is similar to what we've done with other programs to ensure that small courts have the necessary amount to actually implement these programs. So just wanted to call your attention to that.
And I appreciate that, Deidre. There was, that did engender some discussion in TICPAC, and it was clarified that this we will continue, and Budget Services will continue to aggressively monitor this distribution, and the trial courts will do the same thing. So if that funding floor distribution turns out to need to be adjusted, we can pivot and adjust that. If it turns out the concern was, well, maybe that's too much. And the thought was, okay, well, let's watch that very closely. So if it turns out we need to adjust that floor, we can adjust that floor at a later time.
Yes, and you have our commitment. We'll come back to you, both TICPAC and JBPC, if we see any sort of changes that might be necessary based on spending.
All right, Zlatko or Mr. Wardlaw, anything you want to add?
No additional comment for me, Judge. Thank you.
For me, thank you.
All right, is there a motion?
Fujisaki, so move.
All right, is there a second?
Hill second.
All right, Hill seconds for the discussion. All right, seeing none, I just have one. I want to be clear. Ms. Cowan, can you repeat back what the motion is?
Motion to approve the $140 million allocation to the trial court. Is that correct, Judge Mormon and Justice Hill?
Okay, do we want to be more specific? As outlined, do we want to say as outlined in the attachment? I guess we'll have an attachment to the report or something?
As outlined in attachment C.
Okay. All right, with that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? All right, it passes. Judge Conklin.
All right. Again, just like it happened to take back. This last one was at least as brief, if not more. And this relates to the $4.45 million from AB 1058 Reimbursement Authority. I think we have Don with us. If anybody has any questions about this, but it's been allocated, the Judicial Council, and admittedly I'm reading, but this is so technical, has been allocating non-trial court funding related to AB 1058 program for quite a few years. The funds are provided by both federal and general fund dollars. The workload-based methodology was developed for allocation of child support commissioner programs, and in July 21, a new population-based methodology was developed. Today's recommendation is threefold as it relates to the $4.45 million. One, allocate additional funding to the Child Support Commissioner Program, which makes up 75% of that new funding, utilizing the existing methodology but eliminating the 5% cap applied to funding increases to better assist the courts with unmet funding needs. There's also a technical adjustment to a small number of courts as approved by the Council in July, outlined in your materials. Two, allocate the remaining 25% of new funding to the family law facilitator program utilizing the current methodology as outlined. And three, upon approval of one and two, allocate the additional federal drawdown funding outlined beginning at page 20. And Don, I hope I didn't step on your presentation. If you're with us, feel free to
Yes, sir.
I'm with you, and I'm available, as is Anna Maves, to answer any questions on the allocations.
All right, let me ask, are there any questions? Not, is there a motion?
So move.
Was that Harrigan?
No, it's Hock.
Hock. All right.
Bakke second.
Bakke seconds. Sorry, Mr. Harrigan, did you want to second something? No, you're good. Okay. Bakke seconds. Further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, abstain. All right. It passes unanimously. All right. Now, information items. Still Judge Conklin. This time, yep. Mr. Wood, we're going to talk about the annual funding methodology subcommittee work plan update. I understand there's some changes with interpreters and other areas. Go.
So I am going to turn this over to Cottrell because I want him to be able to detail that. Cottrell, you're with, do I see you? There you are. But before I do that, I just want to, you all know the funding methodology subcommittee and the value it is to TICVAC and therefore to you. They're the ones that really, really drill down onto the details of many of these allocation methodologies and make recommendations to us. The work they do is tremendous. Rebecca's here. I think she might have just had a drop off. Rebecca and Judge Buckley head that group. It is so valuable to us. I want to take a time to thank them. But this is their work plan. So this is their revised work plan for the upcoming year. And with that, I'm going to hand it to Cottrell so he can detail it a little bit. And then I'm going to step away for 2 minutes. Step away for 2 minutes while he's doing that. Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. As Judge Conklin mentioned, this is the updated work plan. This is an info item. I'm not sure if there are any questions that I can address.
Are there any questions for Mr. Wood? I'm not seeing any. Well, thank you for that.
Of course.
You were great.
Try to stay respectful of everyone's time.
You planned this to come in at the end when everyone's exhausted. All right. Perfect. Good job. Thank you. Well, wait. We may need you because I don't have Judge Conklin on. We have Ms. Tuck. She'll help us out. Thank you, Mr. Wood. All right. The trial court executive summary display is another informational item, and this is going to be with Ms. Tuck because Ms. Judge Conklin's not with us. Ms. Tuck, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. If you could maybe give us 2 minutes of your best material on this item.
I'm really sorry, and I'm back.
Well, we've already given it over to Ms. Tuck. So.
And I'll tell you at the end of the meeting why I had to step away, and you'll appreciate that, but I'll wait till the end of my presentation to do that. Go ahead, Oksana. I'm sorry to interrupt.
So in all fairness, this is Brandy to Oksana. Judge, I did let her know that you would lead this one. So I'm happy to do it if you are not ready.
I'm here. This is one of the most, a very effective tool that the trial courts have and that TICVAC has is what we call our executive summary display. And those are tools that the local trial courts can use to show how important these budgets are to them, how they use the budgets. And so the display you see, we formatted it to give you a what we call a small court, a medium court, and a large court display to help you understand how those courts explain the money that comes into them and explain how the money is spent. And Brandy, did you want to add any more detail to that?
Just that we do focus on what the kind of changes or priorities are from year to year, and the display does change accordingly. So this year we did add in the restoration, fortunately, that we were able to receive pretrial funding is another one. So just as we do provide this to trial courts, we will change our focus in the boxes you see to highlight different things as they change year to year.
Well, that's outstanding. Thank you. All right, any questions for Ms. Olvera or Judge Conklin on this? All right, seeing none, finally, trial court trust funds on behalf of expenditure reporting. That's Mr. Wood and Judge Conklin. Go ahead.
Yep. So again, here we are, and now you guys are right on schedule. So as you remember, what one of the changes that we've adopted and we make use of now is the fund, the trial courts and the funds they have, they can ask that certain funds that are predetermined or pre-allocated be maintained by council and by budget services for their use. So the most common example of this that we've seen is for case management systems. And the courts that commit to year-over-year spending for their case management systems. And then things, for a variety of reasons, as we all know, those case management systems don't roll out as anticipated. And that's not a criticism, it's just a fact. And so these trial courts ask that the funds that were originally allocated for their case management systems continue to remain in their coffers, so to speak, but it's really in the JC coffers to be controlled so they don't lose them. So they don't have, they can continue to use them for the purpose anticipated. And Cottrell, you can probably explain it even better. Why don't you add to that if you can?
Sure. So to kind of pick up on Judge Conklin's points regarding the funds head on behalf process, essentially what happens is courts are required to update the status of completed projects within 90 days of the completion of that project. This is pursuant to council and take back policy. And essentially that's what we're seeing here. We did reach out, when I say we, I'm referring to budget services. We reached out to those courts that had projected to have completed projects through the end of July. Three courts completed projects, or at least reported completion of those projects. And that's what we're reporting in this report to council.
Well, that's outstanding. More good work. You're welcome. Any questions for Mr. Wood or Judge Conklin on this? Seeing none. Well, thank you to all our presenters for coming in. Thank you to Judge Conklin and Ms. Fleming for helping us out on our conversation around the $60 million. I want to, as always, thank all of you. And we did run over, so I apologize for that. But thank you for all of you for your continued hard work. I did want to say, when we write up the $60 million report, we, of course, are going to include in the body of the report the tick back recommendation itself. And kind of like we did with the first one, with the, if you recall from the CPI/equity discussion that we had around the $72 million. We're going to reframe some of the language around the motion so that we clarify some of the discussion around what pro rata means. We may probably have a footnote just defining what the formula is, and then anybody can look at it and we can terminate, use any terminology we want. So with that, any good of the order comments? Okay, well, if you were thinking you were going to see West Side Story on Broadway in the revival, it is not reopening. Thought I'd make that announcement. All right, well, thank you all, as always, for your hard work, and I will see you next time. Talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend, everybody.